Welcome to The Commerce Order, powered by Kibo, the podcast that brings you closer to the future of commerce. Each episode, we sit down with industry leaders, innovators, and Kibo experts to unpack the latest trends, tackle the toughest challenges, and reveal the strategies shaping retail, e-commerce, and order management. Join us as we explore how technology, culture, and consumer behavior intersect to redefine the shopping experience. Just a quick note for the listeners. The opinions of the guests are their own and do not reflect the corporation where they work. I'm your host, Ty Sweet, Senior Marketing Engineer at Kibo Commerce, and here's the episode. At the time of this recording, Dylan was the Omnichannel Practice Lead at Summit Advisory Team. Since then, Dylan has taken the position of Head of Order Operations with Aries Solutions. Dylan brings over two decades of extensive retail experience spanning store, digital, and supply chain operations. Prior to joining Aries, Dylan held numerous business operations and product management roles, including strategic leadership positions at several prominent omnichannel retailers. He has successfully spearheaded multiple strategic initiatives, guiding retailers through agile implementations focused on increasing market share, optimizing core transactional metrics, and enhancing customer net promoter scores, including significant migrations from legacy technologies to best-of-breed solutions. These initiatives encompass transformative changes across supply chain, retail stores, marketing, and digital commerce, including post-purchase experiences such as fulfillment, returns, and customer care. He is an advocate for innovation, encouraging businesses to think differently and explore new ventures while also ensuring that their efforts are consistent with departmental and corporate objectives, enabling them to achieve their desired results. Today, we'll discuss peak preparation strategies, the customer experience, problem-solving philosophies, and goal-setting realities for retailers. Hope you enjoy the interview. All right, welcome in everyone to the show. I'm super excited about the guests that we've got today and the topic that we're going to talk about. But before we can dive into the topic, we actually have to introduce the guest and let them kind of credentialize themselves. So Dylan, please, why don't you introduce yourself and give us a little background on who you are?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. For everybody, I'm Dylan Telford. I'm the Omnichannel Practice Lead at Summit Advisory Team. Joined there in 2023. And prior to joining a consulting firm, I've been, you know, on the operating side of retail for over 20 years and operating, whether that's actually hands-on executing business needs or if that's actually building the strategy and helping work with the teams that bring that to life. So I bring a lot of my real world experience into what I do in consulting today.
That's awesome, Dylan. We're super excited to have you here today. At least I am, but I'm sure everyone else is as well. So, and again, super excited about the topic we got. But before we get to that, there's always this kind of fun icebreaker question thing that we do. And so I'm going to throw this out to you. What is your most controversial opinion?
So besides, I'm okay with pineapple on pizza. Yeah.
That's controversial, so indeed. Yes.
This one, when I say it, it shouldn't feel controversial because we're not in the heat of the moment of some problem going on. But something that often comes up and that I remind people on, I get pushback from time to time on pretty heavily, is when a problem happens and we have to go through, especially if it's, you know, in a time crunch. It's always more important, in my opinion, to figure out what the triggering action is from a system or an operational standpoint that caused the problem so we can actually diagnose and fix rather than the who caused this, which team, which person. You'd certainly want to get to that at some point because you want to be able to understand the full story so that you can avoid it in the future. It's not about accountability in the moment being held against somebody, right? You're not pushing people up against, well, that's not going to help anything. It's, you got to stop, you got to take a breath, you have to be less worried about whose fault it is and more worried about how do we get things rolling. Once things are going, you got all the time in the world, right, to figure out what happened and however you're going to take that action. But I always like to bring this up when people ask me about things that I think are controversial because it's a good reminder that our emotions can really drive us to make decisions that make us go slower a lot of times.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, first things first, let's take care of the issue at hand, and then we can worry about, you know, what caused it and then how we prevent that in the future, you know, kind of later on. But let's at least tackle the problem that we've got at this point. So I like it. I like it. I honestly don't think it's all that controversial, but you know, some people might. Some people want to get to the roots of the problem before, and I'm with you, man. I feel like that's not a beneficial use of time in the moment. So let's jump into the topic today. You know, typically we kind of, you know, start asking questions and kind of let it unfold. But honestly, you know, you and I have had conversations around this, and I'm super excited to talk about this today because it's, you know, it's something that is super popular to talk about. And a lot of people talk about it, and a lot of people talk about it way too late. And this is about, you know, it's around peak preparedness, right? And being ready for when peak season comes upon us. You know, we're recording this in you know, late September of 2025. So obviously this would be way too late at this point. We're hoping to put this out kind of maybe early 26 to kind of get people started on that path. But one of the things that we talked about, you know, when we were kind of kicking this idea around was, you mentioned that peak preparation should be kind of a year-round process, or at least begin much earlier than retailers think. Again, much earlier than September 29th, I think, is today. So how can retailers best prepare for the upcoming peak retail season? And what are some of the key elements of a successful peak planning strategy?
Sure. So I think there's a few things that are necessary to really just get moving within here. You got to have somebody on point, right? Somebody's got to own it. Somebody's got to be the person that's kind of bringing everybody else along, because this isn't a one small team kind of exercise. This is the organization at large. It's also not technology specific. It is operations as well, because we operate differently when we get into peak, right? So you need somebody who's going to be able to be a great voice and in between everybody and bring this whole thing together. Now, depending on the size of your company, you might not be able to afford to hire somebody specifically that just does this job. I think in a lot of cases, you may find that the payoff in the end probably justifies it, but you could find people who are ready to take that next step of taking on some more responsibility, and this could be part of what they're doing through the rest of the year. The point being, if you're doing it all year, you shouldn't be buried in it at any point, right? So you got to have somebody who's running it itself, and then you got to have the conversation after peak. And I think a lot of companies are doing this these days. I think with the adoption of agile processes, whether you're actually applying that at the micro level within the work that you're doing all year, the peak retrospective has become a thing that I think a lot of companies have been putting into play. But is it just talk, or are you actually applying what you're getting actively and right away, right? Like, are you getting ahead of it? And then the other piece is you got to check in throughout the year too, right? Like, everything you're doing in the roadmap for changes, and again, those can be technology or operational or a combination of both. Everything that you're doing is really feeding into, right? It's Black Friday when we start getting into peak, right? Your company's going into the black because this is when you're driving such huge numbers. Why are you waiting in the end, right? I can guarantee you a lot of this is going to be a benefit the rest of the year. If you drove the traffic that you get on Black Friday in May for any reason whatsoever, you don't want to be surprised with that and, you know, have systems go down or not be able to account for the operational changes that you need quickly. So I think it's, you got to, you know, have the person, you got to have the conversation coming out of peak, and then you've got to, you know, keep talking about it through the rest of the year. The final piece that is often too big of a challenge to overcome late is you have to have ways to measure your data. You set all the goals you want, but if you can't measure against them, then why are you setting the goal? Start setting some goals for, you know, being able to measure the data that you need to be able to measure, and then getting you know, better at that practice overall. I'd say with those four things, you now have some focus within there. You've got the iterative ability with the conversations that are going on. You've got the retrospective with the measurement, hopefully, that you can actually set new goals. And those goals can be set in a way now where you are incrementally making the value difference over the year. Instead of saying, all right, we're in October, I need to be able to take three times the traffic that I would normally take. Let's start hammering the systems and stop doing everything.
Yeah, and I think everything you said there is spot on. You know, everybody kind of thinks of peak as, all right, it's time to gear up and time to you know, kind of throw everything that we've got at this and kind of staff up. We're going to do that, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I think one of the big ones that I want to drill down on a little bit is the insights and the data and analytics and roadmap part of that, because I think it's pretty easy to get overlooked, right? People don't really look at past performance, right? How, what happened last peak, and how can we start looking at that early on and start to plan for how we mitigate that moving forward? So how can a company use insights from a peak retrospective to inform the roadmap for the following year? And really, what kind of data should companies be looking at beyond customer calls to understand and address the recurring issues that they're having?
This can sound very generic, but you really need to measure your whole business. This could, you could have challenges that come from, you know, cost and customer expectation challenges with splitting orders, for instance, right? And you may be configured in a way where you are costing your business more, you're missing out on customer expectations. It's just as bad to ship part of the order when somebody needs something in a specific amount of time and then have the other piece come late as it is to have the order late emotionally at that time. Obviously, if everything's late, everything's late. That's much worse. But, you know, you could have something like that. You could have, you ordered too much inventory and now you're getting into your returns period in January and you're also doing a huge clearance sale and you're selling inventory you just got, right? And you're trying to move through it and you're losing all the value of that inventory because you maybe bought too much because you took too big of a bet on that. So you really have to measure the whole business. How did we do from an inventory position, from a sell-through standpoint? How did we operate? And that's multifaceted, so I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole or we're going to lose our entire time here. But how do we operate in fulfillment? How do we operate our website? How do we operate in our stores? You know, did we need to make changes that we didn't think about? Did we think the status quo was okay within there? And so you have to be able to measure all of these different pieces, which is why you need to bring these groups together, because you want to partner with people. You don't want to have one person that's running all the analytics for everything and say, got that done. This is what this looked like. And then they don't know what to do with the rest of their time because it's up to that point, they'd been hired just to run data on peak. You need those teams to come together, own their data, own their insights, and really feed into a roadmap itself. Right, you want to take the expertise from the people who own those areas of the business and have them driving the changes that are necessary to move the needle, rather than, you know, somebody who owns peak preparation coming back and saying, oh, by the way, I think you should make this change. Now, collaboratively, everybody's input is important, but when you have it owned within these individual areas, it becomes a lot stronger. Some other things that are top of mind that you want to think about, right, is returns themselves. There's a really big challenge in returns. I think it was between 22 and 23. There was two different surveys that were about, is our returns a big issue? And I think it was double or single digits 1 year, jumped up like 40%+ of companies think it's a big deal the next year. And so returns are a huge issue that, I don't want to say an issue. It's an accepted challenge within the business because it's a customer expectation. But what are you doing about it in the end there? You want to look at, like I said, you want to look at inventory, you want to look at your operations themselves, how quickly you're getting them, orders out the door for customers, and how much are they costing you, right? If you're getting them out the door, but you're sending them all to stores that have a very low productivity rate and you're just burying those stores and they're not taking care of customers that are in store, you're probably losing out in the long run. I need to look better at how you filtered through that.
Yeah, absolutely. And returns are something we'll talk about momentarily, but you mentioned a couple things there that I think are important. One is inventory. And obviously people are going to look at that and be like, yeah, obviously we're worried about, you know, the inventory piece. We need to get more inventory in so we can sell more and you know, have, you know, make more money, all of those things. But I think there's some pieces there that really need to be looked at when we're talking about inventory. So my question to you is, why is it crucial to have real-time inventory management and to adjust order routing rules based on that historical data?
Oh, boy. I'll say again, there's nothing worse than being on the receiving side during peak, whether you're a friend, parent, loved ones, anybody, it doesn't matter. If you're getting somebody a gift within your respected celebration and it doesn't come on time, or it doesn't come at all. The inventory was so inaccurate that it got canceled, right? It can be extremely deflating at a time of year where people are trying to be as cheerful as possible. Is why do we try to stress people at the same time? And not that we're intentionally doing it, but when we don't make a change that's specific for the behaviors that we know we see at that time of year, you know, we're leading into a lot more customer service issues that are going to cost money as well. On top of, you're just, you know, making that time of the year not as special for some people. And it's should be a lot easier than that, right? So do you need to be a little bit more conservative in how much you protect? Do you need to open up in cases where you do have really efficient stores that are helping fulfill orders? Do you need to open up the aperture a little bit and, you know, staff appropriately to be able to do just some really heavy fulfillment out of some key stores on top of what you have coming from distribution centers and potentially vendors? You need to know the timing of when that stuff's coming in. Do you promise against future inventory? How accurate is that future inventory? And if it's not, how do you behave conservatively so you don't overpromise itself? Routing rules. That one just kills me because it feels like you should be able to get ahead of it, right? It's you've got a different goal. Most companies have a different goal at Black Friday, Cyber Monday through the following week than they do the weeks leading up to something like Christmas, right? In the beginning, you may be looking at how do I optimize my costs, because there is some level of expectation you could put out there that orders are going to ship slower. Right. So can you do things in your routing where you can say these are the most optimal costs that I have and I'm not missing any expectations for customers because I'm still getting it there well before their expectation of need. It's in the end. But I don't need to, you know, kill a specific facility to do so and have those people stressed out as well and going home and having to deal with their own problems. And then immediately after that, then it does become about urgency. So then you might want to change your rules to tighten things down to be the absolute highest likelihood of fulfillment on time, meeting your promise dates and everything else. Planning for that in advance should be fairly easy because you can experiment through the entire year, right? I can say if I change rule A, I end up saving money as I go through, but I ship a little bit slower. And then you can undo that and you don't have to have that set all year. If I change rule B, I am highly accurate in my fulfillment and my promise execution, but it costs me a bit more as I get there, right? Find that balance, do that testing. There's other times of the years where we get traffic. And depending on the kind of business, you know, that could be back to school, that could be, you know, competing with Amazon, it could be really anything. If it's going to drive traffic, use that as a time to do some, you know, responsible experimentation, but be ready. I'm planning for these days to have this configuration. If your tool set allows you to set those configurations in advance to take effect during that time, if it doesn't, have the people operationally ready to say, we're going to go make these changes on this date. We need to cut over. We need to test it, make sure everything's moving through. And then the next date that you need to make change and so on and so forth as you run through. But we shouldn't act surprised during peak as often as I feel like we do. I feel like we've got a lot of knee-jerk reactions that happen because of, oh, we got a lot of traffic. Yes, you should have been expecting a lot of traffic. Oh, we're slower on shipping. You knew you were going to be slower on shipping because you got a lot of traffic. Just get ahead of that. Build rules that allow you to be nimble, but still you're planned as you move forward and not just reactive. And reactive is most likely going to cost you more in the end.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, you should have, you know, hopefully you've got an order management platform in place. And shameless plug here with Kibo, you know, Kibo allows you to kind of put all of those routing rules together in advance. And then just kind of with one click, you can switch those over. Right. But one of the other great things is you can protect your staffing at, you know, say if you're doing a lot of ship from store or buy online, pick up in store, you know, you can protect the amount of orders that a specific location is going to get so that you're not overwhelmed, especially when you've got a lot more walk-in traffic that's going to happen during these times, especially Black Friday, you know, those specific weekends. So you can set a lot of that up in advance, which is great for the stores. Your distribution centers, however, are obviously going to see a significant uptick in orders throughout the season, especially days like Cyber Monday, but even throughout the season as more and more people get used to kind of getting things kind of shipped directly to them and not really having to step outside, especially as the temperatures get colder, depending on where you live. So can you discuss the importance of dynamic staffing models, especially within those distribution centers?
Oh, absolutely. And it can be really hard. It depends on where you are, what the you know, economics in your current area for that geography are. Just availability of people to be able to do the staffing. A lot of companies, you know, they chose where they're going to choose from a distribution standpoint because there's other distribution centers there. There's established routes with carriers. It's going to cost them less in the end. But that means you're fighting for local resources to actually accomplish the work. And often you'll find that a lot of those folks are working at multiple distribution centers, and they're, you know, they've got their own life to live. So they're trying to figure out, you know, what meets my, you know, my expectations from how much I'm getting paid, what hours I'm working, my total availability, how's that impacting my personal life. You find a lot of people that have kids and that they just can't juggle these dynamic schedules that kind of move all over the place. But what they can do is they can choose the options that they take in many cases. And what I mean by that is I worked for a company before that went through a really interesting experiment that played out really well. That was with dynamic staffing. And it was a part-time on-call model. And so they took on a partner that allowed them to essentially hire a lot of part-time staff that's not necessarily scheduled regularly. And that staff would have access to an app where open shifts were provided. And within those open shifts, they can say, I want to take that shift. We found that because they're choosing them, they're more likely to even show up for the shift itself. And so you're more likely to have the amount of people that you need to have there if you're exposing beyond who you've got, your trusted team that's already there, and now you're saying I need to ramp up. I can't say that this completely gets rid of staff augmentation through agencies and things like that, where you're going to get potentially 50 people that come in that just help you hammer through a lot of volume. But those people might show up one day and then just be like, I didn't really like what I was doing yesterday, so I just am not showing up tomorrow. And it's very volatile within there, and it's not necessarily feeding into what you were expecting. We're using part-time on call, and they're more likely to show up, and you're taking these people. A, they've already been trained at some point. Yes, if they're not showing up and working every single week, multiple days, as changes happen, you need to make sure you give them a little update. Hey, this is different when you come through. But it feels a lot safer when you go through that. And then they can be on staff all year. And you might not staff them very often when you don't have a lot of high volume. They might not choose those shifts when they have a lot of high volume. But again, this is somebody who's sitting that chose to be part-time. They're not getting benefits paid out from you. They're on your books and they're available. And they chose to choose this model. And so when you crowdsource from that group, it showed to be very valuable and be able to fit a lot of those gaps that were needed. The other thing that's always interesting to look at, and this is really an inclusivity play as well, but there's, depending on where you live, there's a lot of organizations out there that do assisted, you know, career placement and job placement for people who are neurodiverse, may have, you know, autism, for instance. They may have some communication challenges within there. But some of those places will even have the representative or a representative from the organization come in, and you're not paying that person. That's paid by the organization. And the person that's on staff or people they bring on staff, they're just trying to help. You don't have to hire a staff that now needs to know everything about handling, you know, special needs. But you're able to give these people who are looking for jobs and want to be included in everything else, you're giving them another opportunity too. So not just for peak the rest of the year, but if you're looking for places to hire people to do work, there's a lot of people out there that they just need that opportunity. And I think, you know, opening to other opportunities is a powerful way to be able to get through.
Yeah, totally agree. And I like what you say about the neurodiverse organizations. I've worked with organizations in the past that have provided that kind of workforce. And I think it's an excellent pool of workers to pull from. You know, especially that time of season and giving someone an opportunity to kind of step up and do some of those things. So I think those are all great ideas. You mentioned something when we were talking about the order routing earlier, and it was kind of, you know, testing, kind of different types of order routes during, you know, different, you know, kind of peaks that you see during the year. You mentioned back to school, some of these other things that kind of crop up, depending on the type of industry that you're in, obviously. And that kind of sparked this idea of like performance testing, and kind of doing that, throughout the year and kind of getting a grasp on, you know, what you're going to be able to do during peaks. So how can performance testing throughout the year prevent surprises during the peak season? And can companies that are in a code freeze period still find ways to innovate and deliver new value?
Yeah, great question. The code freeze period, I'll just start from the end there. often is protecting so that these activities can happen, right? And so you built up a lot of functionality over the year against whatever roadmap you were working against. And you, everything's coming at once, right? So you're not plowing the road proactively so that you've got a little bit to plow. You're plowing everything all at once. Roads are shut down, you know, metaphorically, you are potentially just taking on a lot more work through the entire year. I mean, let's face it. If we're putting in new code, we're kind of fooling ourselves if we think that it's not some sort of impact to performance. Some of it may be a benefit. Great. Find out. No. Right. What did you do there that was a benefit that can potentially be applied to other things? More often than not, we end up just having more functionality and capabilities run through, so things can run a bit slower. But you should find out at the time whether, you know, if you can performance test quarterly and pull together everything that you have, this person who's running point, if they can get that scheduled and get everybody to work together, who's to say you can't pull in your peak to be a lot shorter, your peak freeze to be a lot shorter of a period, because you're regularly getting ready for volume. If you're doing this appropriately, and if you're able to get this accomplished, you shouldn't be surprised with the numbers that you're seeing when you do final performance testing going into the peak, because you've been testing it the whole time. You see something nudge a little bit, you get it addressed, you move, and you know, I feel like the stress rate should be a lot lower for people going into peak period, and it shouldn't be this thing that people are dreading that's coming up. You should be excited for it. Here's where we win. I know I'm not going to have to worry about that performance issue as that comes up. So as often as you can possibly do it, I know it's difficult because sometimes when you do these, you're disruptive to operations as well. So you have to be clever about when you choose those times. But it's also a reminder, performance testing is not limited to systems. I'm going to come back to operations or impact as well. You need to know how you perform operationally as well. The system can run as fast as the system can run, but if you're not operating at peak performance, using peak performance as a different route there, but if you're not operating at your highest level, you're not going to be taking advantage of the speed that your system can run through. So again, that can be difficult to work through, but do you have other sales periods that are higher volume that you can maybe use? A great practice that I've seen in the past is at a time of the year where your expedited shipping tends to be significantly lower than what it is in other times of the year, can you, with, you know, just hold back orders and say, I'm going to push peak volume to a distribution center. We're just going to hold back orders, so we're not going to have, you know, a lot of orders or order shipping at all, potentially, if we can accomplish it for a few days, and then we're going to throw everything at the distribution center on that, you know, third, fourth day, and really hit heavy volume. So you're in a real world situation with a lot of volume and you're moving it through, and you have less of a risk of expedited orders needing to make themselves through. I've seen that be very successful. It gets your regular team, your A team that's on all the time, they're just ready, you know, they're on their toes.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, we've mentioned this a couple of times already, and I want to dig into this next topic because it's obviously important year round, but it's definitely, you know, increases in significance around the holiday season. It's around returns, right? We've mentioned this once or twice already, I think. So really, why are returns a significant, often overlooked cost for retailers? And what are some proactive strategies for managing returns, especially during the peak season when they spike?
Sure. I don't have this quantified from a data standpoint, but I suspect from what I see that returns, again, it tends to be something that's expected. It's a capability that we have because not only ourselves and our customers, but, you know, prospects, anybody out there who's shopping is expecting to be able to get quality out of what they're buying. And if what they're buying is not meeting their quality, or there's a mistake, or there's, you know, some sort of quality issue that comes along with the product, ideally you have a way to get returned. It's over and over, you'll see surveys that are taken from customers that say they will not consider shopping again at a retailer that doesn't have an easy return path for them. So you're going to be doing returns. Unfortunately, the data says that most people at companies are seeing 50% of margin eroded already away from a product that then gets returned, you have to sell again. So how do you get the most value out of that product itself? Another reason it's important, 15% of those returns tend to be fraudulent. And so that's just a loss overall. And that's a hard nut to crack, but that's something to put some eyes on, because that's not just in peak. That's the rest of the year. It just gets bigger at peak. And people take advantage when things get bigger and things are more chaotic. So the less chaos you can have and the more ready that you are, you should be able to limit that. It could take more labor to process a return because you're taking something in, you're inspecting it. Now, when we receive inventory from vendors, oftentimes there's some volume that gets inspected. Not every single unit gets inspected, but like, you know, some boxes will get kicked over and they'll be inspected and QA'd and then they'll move through. And so new product gets a little bit of a look, but return product, everything's being looked at when it comes through, right? Is it new in the package? If it's not new in the package, are all the pieces there and components? Is it in the condition that I'm going to sell new to a customer? If not, are there escalation paths internally that require other people that you have to get involved with in there? So there's a, on top of that cost you had just to get the product in and sell it to begin with, now you're adding cost by adding time into what's happening during the return process. And then it's not a small amount, right? It's returns are significant, hundreds of billions of dollars. I think it was almost $900 billion last year in returned items that came through. And it's A, I see opportunity when I see that, right? What can you do with that inventory? And how can you get some value back out of it? Whether you're retaining some level of margin by saying I got an exchange out of it. Maybe you kicked it into an outlet quality, so you're able to guide a different area of business, attract different types of customers. There's some companies that have the opportunity to be able to do used inventory, right? So they can come through and say, hey, you're outside of our return policy, but I can buy it from you. You'll see, this at like electronics and musical instruments, video games, things like that. You'll be able to see that resell kind of side of it. And on that point, you as the retailer get to kind of name what the cost is going to be in the end, right? If you don't want that anymore, you want to get something else, I can have you trade it for something. Here's what I'm willing to give you for it. And now you're able to build your margin back based on, you know, I paid X, I got Y out of this. I think there's a lot of opportunities within returns that they're missed because, coming back to the original statement here, it's a necessity. Right. It's just something that people feel like they have to do. So you tend to see returns as a bullet point on a overall cost savings initiative. You don't tend to see a returns initiative associated with anything, and somebody putting a real, you know, keen eye or taking on partnership to have somebody come in and with a magnifying glass and say, here's what your total returns ecosystem looks like. You have opportunities here, here, and here, and it should, you know, net out to X number of dollars that's going to be a benefit for the customer and for you in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think these are all really great points to bring up and things to kind of take into account when you're kind of looking at and going through peak. Is there anything else, Dylan, that retailers can leverage? Any tips that you've got that we haven't already discussed?
Sure. So this one, I think more retailers are getting on the OKR bandwagon. A challenge that I'm seeing is they're not necessarily being executed against the way is intended, right? It's OKRs in the end are a great way to set goals, but there's also, if you really get down into and you look at the intent of the OKRs, it's not just to say, here's a goal, did I not execute it? They tend to want to be measurable goals within, you know, KPIs that you have as a company that are increases or decreases wherever the value ends up being that you should be stretching to as well. The example that I always give to people is if you know you can grow metric A by 8% and you're confident you have the way to get there, great. Then when you hit 8%, you hit 8%. Everybody celebrates and you kind of move on. What if you could possibly hit 13%, but it's going to be really hard? Are you going to be upset when you hit 11? No, because you knew you can hit 8 and now you hit 11, right? And now you've got this growth within. So if you're going to set OKRs, you're going to take that on some of the business. I challenge people to challenge themselves, really stretch those goals and be okay with 70% execution against it, because 70% execution may be more than you expected to get to begin with. It also allows people to get more creative in the problems that they solve. And so as you go throughout the year, if you're working within your OKRs, and let's just say you're not ready to take them on quarterly or something like that, you're going to take them on for the full year, you still have a number you want to go after. You can still have incremental measurements within there. You can say, hey, I want to by this time be able to hit this number to show that I'm on track. If you're not on track, you can pivot. You can say, what I'm doing is not working against what I expected to be able to do. How do I change that outcome, and where do I go? You don't want to just execute roadmaps. They should be delivering the value that you think you should be getting out of it. And we shouldn't be hearing, I'm putting myself out of business as a consultant from here, but we shouldn't be hearing as often people saying, we build our roadmap with a lot of rigor and we continue to not see the performance that we expected to see out of our roadmap. What we should be saying is, oh yeah, we thought we were going to put that in and we decided not to put it in because as we were measuring throughout the year, it was not performing the way that we expected. So we actually shifted to why. Oh, I never heard of that. Great. Here's why it was important to us. It might not be important to you, but it's important to us. And here's where we move the needle. Now innovation's truly happening and people are doing different things that can trigger new thoughts from others and bring additional value. So if you're in a goal model that uses something like OKRs, I urge you very much to stretch, measure often. Within there with measure, if you don't have a strategy for your data throughout the entire year to just get better at how you, the visibility that you have, how you measure, how accessible that is to people across the organization. If you find you have siloed data, speaking of accessibility, that my area of the business has a trickle-down effect to your area of the business, I should be encouraged to understand what the data looks like in your area of the business so that I know the decisions that I make. If I feel like it's going to potentially have a trickle-down effect that's negative, we can get it together in advance and say, hey, is it the right thing to do to begin with? Or if the juice is worth the squeeze heavily on that side, what changes can you make in your area of the business that can account for that and either offset it or improve it overall to the point where it really doesn't matter that that trickle through happened. It was expected and you collaborated on a better solution. Those would be my two main items.
Awesome. It's a lot of great information today, Dylan, and I really appreciate you coming on and giving out some tips and pointers. And hopefully everybody kind of took something away today, if not pretty much everything across the board. I know there was some great points here that I hadn't considered before, for sure. So before we wrap up fully today, though, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you this kind of last question, since we're talking about peak season, peak performance, you know, all of that. Do you have any peak season horror stories that you've witnessed yourself?
I have a lot. With over 20 years on the client side and living retail, there's certainly been a lot. One that stands out to me is I worked for a retailer that wanted to be clever for margin purposes with the pricing that they were doing during Black Friday. And what they did was not only did they separate what the general discount online was versus what the discount in store was, they actually changed the discount in store at a different time. So it was 50% off everything online, 50% off everything in store until 2 o'clock, and then it's 40% off everything in store. We're watching the numbers, we're watching the traffic, and we are not performing. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm down the street from a mall. I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to go see what's going on. Mall's hopping. It was impossible for me to find. I had to take a shuttle that I've never had to take at this mall before, right? From parking to get to the mall itself. Walked around, stores just packed. They're packed. Going to my store, not packed. Very few people that were in it. And almost all of them had their phones out and they were looking at the sign on the rack versus the sign online that says what the discount is and confused as to why they aren't the same number. And employees were running around trying to get the signs changed so that they matched what the in-store was supposed to be at that time versus what's online and making sure people are reading the finer print. You know, customers don't work at your company. They don't know the ins and outs of the decisions that you make. Sometimes we want to expose that decision. Sometimes we don't. But don't confuse them, especially on a day like Black Friday. Know what your competition has done in the past. Know what works and what doesn't work. If you're going to take a discount, commit. If you're going to make customers guess, or you're going to reduce the discount because you don't want to take that discount all day, try to find a middle road, right? If 50% is not right all day across the board and 40% is too little to be competitive, is 45% right? If you're going to change the price at a certain time, don't have people surprised when they look online and they see one price and they see a different price in store. They're not you know, part of the company. They don't need to be educated on why we chose a price. Choose a price and move. That would be one recent one, at least for me.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't even have words for that. Like that is the exact opposite thing that you want to have happen. So yeah, that would be the ultimate horror story for sure. You're putting on a great sale and nobody knows anything about it. So really, really tough. So again, Dylan, thanks so much for the conversation today. A lot of great tips. A lot of great information that hopefully some people can take away for sure. So thank you so much for today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I was really excited to be able to have this conversation. I'm hoping people get a lot out of it. I just want to see people be successful. I want to see companies thriving, and peaks just so huge. It's be ready, you know, be ready, be comfortable, be excited about things that are going to happen. And then when things do come up, you're not piling stress on stress. It's new stress. And yeah, it's probably going to be uncomfortable, but it's the one thing you need to look at, not everything all at once.
Absolutely. I think the key takeaway there from the entire thing, right, is be ready. Just yeah. Be ready. So, and for everyone else, until next time.
That concludes another episode of The Commerce Order, powered by Kibo, where we explore the evolving landscape of commerce from cutting-edge AI and digital transformation to strategies for optimizing operations and enhancing the customer journey. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please take a moment to subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share this podcast with your colleagues and friends.
We love hearing from our listeners. If you have a suggestion for a future guest or are interested in being a guest yourself, please reach out to us. To learn more about exciting upcoming Kibo features and announcements, visit our website at kibocommerce.com and follow us on our LinkedIn page by searching for Kibo Commerce. You can also find these links in the podcast notes. Tune in next time for a fresh new episode of The Commerce Order, powered by Kibo.